Looking for excitement? Chumba Casino is here. Play anytime, play anywhere. Play on the train, play at the store, play at home, play when you're bored. Play today for your chance to win and get daily bonuses when you log in. So what are you waiting for? Don't delay. Chumba Casino is free to play.
Experience social gameplay like never before. Go to Chumba Casino right now to play hundreds of games, including online slots, bingo, Slingo, and more. Live the Chumba life at ChumbaCasino.com.
Terms and conditions apply.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Scott Wetzel and Ben Stevens.
Football Full Circle starts right here, right now, live on the Sports Grid Radio Network and Sirius XM Channel 159. I am Ben Stevens alongside Scott Wetzel, filling in for Joe Lisi on this edition of FFC. Scott, how you doing, my man?
Good, Ben. How are you?
Doing very well. You know why, Scott? Because college football feels like it's unofficially getting kicked off all across the country. Last week, we had Big 12 Media Days in Arlington, Texas, and today begins the granddaddy of them all. No, not the Rose Bowl, but what we can expect to be the theatrics of SEC Media Days. It gets started today. It runs through Thursday. The ACC has its Media Days later this week as well. The Pac-12 and the Big 10 on the horizon. So, Scott, it feels like college football is very, very close.
And I throw a free plug out here through a friend of the of Sports Grid. Mark Lawrence's playbook.com preview college football NFL hits newsstands today. So that in fact, as soon as the show is over and I get done my podcast, I'm going to head to my local Barnes & Noble, which is the only place nowadays you can find magazines, and pick up my copy. So, yeah, this should be a lot of fun, though, with the SEC, right, with all the Nick Saban stuff. I don't know. I'm sure they're going to probably try and blow it off all over again, but hopefully the media does a good enough job of bringing it back up so we get some decent comments out of these guys.
Well, anytime you hear from head football coaches speak at a podium in front of a microphone, weird stuff tends to come out of their mouth. Last week at Big 12 Media Days, we had Brent Venables, the new head coach for the Oklahoma Sooners, say that his mouth is fully inserted into the fire hose and he's blowing and going on both ends, whatever that truly means. We had Mike Gundy, in jest, only a joke, talking about why are Oklahoma and Texas even here? If I'm Brett Yormark, the new commissioner of the Big 12, I just kicked them out of league meetings. Who needs those guys here? They're traitors. Ha, ha, ha. I'm only joking, but within every joke, there is obviously some truth. So I think we'll have more of that in store at SEC Media Days, especially, Scott, because as you mentioned, it wasn't even at a media day or a press conference that earlier this summer in the offseason, we had the war of words between Nick Saban and Jimbo Fisher. It started with Nick Saban at a kickoff event for the World Games in Birmingham, questioning how Texas A&M got its best ever recruiting class in the history of college football, insinuating that the Aggies and Jimbo Fisher bought this class. Jimbo then calls an impromptu press conference the following morning in College Station and absolutely obliterates his former boss, calling him a czar of college football. Well, maybe if he's a czar, look into his past, saying he should deserve to be slapped, Nick Saban, because that's what his dad used to do if anybody lied and spoke up out of turn. So maybe we'll get some of that drama this week at SEC Media Days.
Yeah, you know, I also wondered why Jimbo was so upset about what was said. You know, listen, if you wanted to be word that the best players come to my school because we pay them, and they do in essence, I mean, they get contracts, they get scholarships, they get the, you know, endorsement deals, okay, I'm fine with that. Go ahead and promote that. You know, if that's the mantra all around the world, right, I'm trying to recruit a kid, and the kid's kind of hemming and hawing on where he wants to go, and he knows that Texas A&M, you know, gets the best players. players because they get the most money? Well, I didn't understand, Ben, why Jimbo was that mad about that. You know, I mean, that's the reputation of our school. Great. More power to us. I think they let him open up some doors. Absolutely, Scott.
I think you bring up a very fair point, because what Nick Saban said, although there was an insinuation behind his words, because still the idea of paying recruits or money in college sports, specifically college football, has a taboo sense to it. But NIL has been legal for over a year, started last year, July 1st, 2021. That is the future of how you are going to recruit in college football, to show the profitability of these young high school stars and how they can profit off their name, image, and likeness in their college years. And yes, NIL has taken many forms so far. It is an imperfect system as it has begun to be rolled out. But when the NCAA passed the buck down the road for quite some time, it didn't put any legislation or regulations in place before all this was coming, there were going to be some hiccups. And yes, NIL at times right now is looking more like pay for play than actually profiting off your name, image, and likeness and being a marketable commodity, yada, yada, yada. But the idea of being able to pay a college athlete, not from the school necessarily, but the idea of a college athlete making money and profiting off their name, image, and likeness is exactly what Jimbo Fisher should be doing. It's exactly what he should be selling to recruits. If you come here and you're a star for Texas A&M at College Station, throughout those 3-4 years, you are going to make X amount of money based on these marketable deals that we can get for you, all the NIL money that you can make here as a star. So it's exactly what he should be doing. Jimbo Fisher, even, Scott, you could argue, on the forefront of this evolving landscape of college football recruiting.
Yeah, I would have come out the next day and said, you know what? I mean, he kind of took it out of context a little bit, but yeah, he's right. We get the most money. Yeah, you come here, we don't pay you, but we have the deals lined up with our guys, our boosters, and yep, you come here, big-time player, you're going to get the most money right here at Texas A&M. Fight fire with fire, Ben. I'm a big believer in that. You want to call us whatever you want to call us, but kids, which is our main goal, you know you come to Texas A&M, we're going to get you the most money. And
absolutely.
We would have left it at that.
Absolutely so, because what Jimbo would have said if he did go that course would have been completely legal based on the guidelines that we have right now. Nothing he did was illegal. It wasn't like Nick is trying to get him NCAA sanctions. It wouldn't be able to be held up by any kind of ruling the NCAA would come down with. What Jimbo Fisher did, however he recruited this best recruiting class in the history of college football, was exactly in the legalities of the guidelines we have right now for NIL. So we'll continue going around SEC Media Days, what we might hear, and then what we can expect on the field from an odds perspective up next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Scott Wetzel and Ben Stevens.
Football Full Circle rolls on the Sports Grid Radio Network as SEC Media Days begins today, the unofficial kickoff of a new Southeastern Conference football season. And Scott, right now, Greg Sankey at the podium at SEC Media Days, of course, the commissioner of the SEC. And a ton of conversation will not just be the X's and O's and the depth chart and all that we can look forward to on the college football field this upcoming year. It, of course, will be a conversation about the ever-evolving landscape of college sports, specifically in college football, and certainly the conversation of the last month has been conference realignment. The SEC really got this conversation started last summer when Texas and Oklahoma announced they were leaving the Big 12 starting in 2025 to join the SEC. Then every move since then has really been in response to the SEC making the first chess move on the board, and as of late, the Big Ten adding USC and UCLA for the 2024 college sports season. So Greg Sankey at the podium, and just moments ago when asked about, will it really not be until 2025? Will Oklahoma and Texas not join the league for another few seasons in this weird limbo status? Greg Sankey said that decision is not on him, meaning that the Texas and Oklahoma administrators must fulfill their grant rights to leave the conference, and if they decide to pay a hefty penalty to leave early, that would be for their own league and their own conversations to be had within those two specific institutions. Scott, you've seen all this happen in the last summer, in the last couple of months around college football. Where do you think the college sports landscape is going with conference realignment?
I think ultimately there'll probably be two conferences, whether it's the Big Ten or the SEC, or whether it's called something different. But that's where I think it's going. And listen, I've made the case, Ben. I'm not for this, but if I was them, I mean, in college football's main guys, I would create an NFL. I really would, and then I'd throw soccer into the equation as well. How so? I'd take the top 32 teams, or pick a number, 30, whatever you want, right? And we all know who the top 30 are. It wouldn't be that difficult to get the top 30. And have them play and have form a league with those teams that they all play each other, just like the NFL does. And our day, meaning college football, would be a Saturday. The NFL would have the Sunday. And then all those other teams are still necessary. They'll still all play. And then just like in soccer overseas, which is kind of goofy, but it's actually, you take the top 14 teams of those other leagues, and maybe they can bounce into the big time, and then take the lower four of the big time league, and maybe they fall out like soccer has. I don't know how that all works out in soccer, but if there's a will, there's a way. So it kind of keeps those lesser teams still intact and still playing meaningful football, but you have ultimately your big league. What would ABC, what would NBC, CBS, Fox pay for, basically NFL light versus having to, televise South Carolina versus Vanderbilt or Mississippi State versus, Vandy. I mean, who cares, right? Just grab the 32 best teams and do it that way. I think ultimately a form of that is what's going to happen.
Yeah, we'll see exactly what that looks like. I think mega conferences, super conferences are certainly the directory of which we are going in college sports, but it's not just college football. That drives the bus, obviously, but we have other sports that are still a factor of how schedules are made or how conferences are built and TV rights revenue that has to deal with them to a certain extent as well. And I think it's a tough sell. I understand a lot of jokes that have been made at Rutgers' expense or Missouri's expense or Vanderbilt's expense. Why are these teams in these super conferences, the SEC and the Big Ten, who are probably going to win two football games a year, if that, getting to rake in the $100 million-plus dollars that the same Ohio State and Michigan does, or the right. same that Georgia and Alabama do? I understand those conversations. I would also highlight the administrators at both of those programs, or all three that I've mentioned, like Rutgers leaving the Big East when it did and didn't go to the ACC, but saw a benefit of joining the Big Ten, or even Missouri and A&M leaving the Big 12 at a time to go join the SEC within the last decade. So when you have that going, though, Scott, when you have guaranteed money, an even revenue split between 14, 16, 18, 20 programs, whatever it ends up being in these new super conferences, I think you'll have a lot of schools like Rutgers, like Northwestern, even Maryland, other schools like that that aren't all that concerned about the competition on the football field, but enjoy the idea of raking in multiple millions of dollars, hundreds of million dollars, potentially, as has been reported. And they're not going to pass that up for a relegation type of style that we might see, much like European soccer, although that is a way from a competitive standpoint of looking at things.
Yeah, but honestly, if you're Ohio State and you're now USC and UCLA and you're Michigan and maybe Iowa, Penn State as well, and once you start sitting down with the networks that are going to pay you $1 billion, you're going to think that I'm going to be content with Rutgers or Maryland or Indiana, Northwestern to a lesser extent, Minnesota. You're making the same amount of money football-wise as I am? Wait a minute. You're not bringing anything to the table. I'm not going to make a dime less if Minnesota is not part of our TV network contract. I'm not going to make a dime less from CBS if Indiana is not part of our TV contract. Yep. So eventually there's going to be fractions, and that's where the top five or six in each conference are going to say, we don't need Indiana. We don't need Northwestern or Minnesota. Let's get together and get the top six, as SEC says. We don't need Vandy. We don't need South Carolina, Mississippi State. And that's where I think it's all going to turn into the big picture. And it's true. I mean, Ben, how long before, because if you look at the money, the USC and UCLA is really not making any more money going to the Big Ten. The Big Ten's TV contract, they're saying, is going to be anywhere between $800 million and $1 billion, right? Let's just say it's $1 billion. Well, you got 16 pieces of the pie. the Pac-12 contract is ending after this year. They're going to get as much money if they stayed in the Pac-12 with their new TV contract as they're going to get moving to the Big Ten, because there's 16 teams in the Big Ten, and they're dividing that $1 billion up by so many pieces. So I get USC's, UCLA's move. It's not, for me, it's not financially. Maybe there's something more to it than what I'm seeing. But if you break down the numbers, it's very comparable. Let's put it that way. It's not that much more by moving to the Big Ten because of so many teams in the conference.
Oh, Scott, I have to disagree strongly with what you just said. The reason that USC and UCLA are going to the Big Ten is only because of TV rights revenue.
But they're not going to make any more. They're not making any more.
Substantially more, Scott.
No,
The media deal pays out the Pac-12 right now, estimated anywhere from $35 to $40 million annually, split between the 12 schools within the Pac-12 right now. Big Ten teams, Scott, individually last year made $54 million. Rutgers made $54 million. Ohio State made $54 million. It's the same even TV revenue split. The reported new deal for the Big Ten that will take place following 2022, before USC and UCLA joined the conference, was estimated around that $1.1 billion annual deal, paying the Big Ten Conference $1.1 billion annually, split between those 14 teams. USC and UCLA go and join. That number's probably closer to $1.5 billion, if not two, because of the TV market that is Los Angeles. Absolutely so, Scott. Do any kind of reading when it comes to that. The reason that USC and UCLA are there is because of the TV revenue and the market share in Los Angeles and what that means. Apple, who was now out of the conversation surrounding Big Ten rights, is now back in because they see this as a very profitable venture. So if you're talking $1.1 billion reportedly before USC and UCLA joined the conference, having the second biggest DMA in TV market in Los Angeles now with USC and UCLA, that number is going to be estimated approximately at $1.5 billion per year, paid out over 16 programs. That is north of $100 million per year for those teams each and every year. That's the even revenue share. The Pac-12 can't even sniff that.
All right. If those numbers are true, because I read 800 million to a billion. If those numbers you said are true, okay. But if not, Ben, the Pac-12 contract is up. It's a 12-year contract. It's been outdated. With the UCLA and USC in the Pac-12, their new contract is going to be through the roof as well.
I disagree with that, but we'll continue the conversation up next here on Football Full Circle on Sports Grid Radio.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Scott Wetzel and Ben Stevens.
Back here on Football Full Circle, FFC on the Sports Grid Radio Network. Scott Wetzel alongside, and I am Ben Stevens here breaking down the ever-evolving landscape of college sports. And Nick Saban, who will speak over these next few days at SEC Media Days, has some thoughts on the changing landscape of college sports, specifically college football as well. Anytime Nick Saban says something, you often listen to what he has to say as it pertains to this changing time in college sports. So when the SEC first made that move last summer to add Texas and Oklahoma, as it stands right now, OU and UT will join the SEC in 2025. And then the Big Ten followed suit this summer, adding USC and UCLA for 2024. Nick Saban, like many of us, Scott, believes that this is the new era of college football. You might not like it. You might think there is some harm to it. But this is what we are going to continue to see, these ideas of mega conferences. Nick Saban saying on the Always College Football podcast last week, quote, "I think we're going to deal with it in a greater capacity than ever before because I think mega conferences are probably here to stay. Market share, market, there's a lot of that involved in why we're doing what we're doing." Virtually Nick Saban's way of saying that TV revenue, specifically for college football, drives the bus. So Nick Saban, like many of us, Scott, thinks this is what the current landscape looks like and what it will look like moving forward as well.
Yeah, I don't think we've seen the last of it. That's for darn sure, right? We're kind of, to me, in the middle of it, and maybe not even the middle. 4 years from now, 5 years from now, when some of these things are really kind of coming to fruition with the SEC, with the new contract and everything, I could see the whole thing getting blown up. I really can. I think that's what it's being led to. I just don't believe that these teams that seem, or these schools, universities that are so hell-bent on making as much money as possible, which I get, is going to be want to share the same pie as they're doing with the Vanderbilts and the South Carolinas, as we talked about before. I just greed is greed. It's never going to stop until you get ultimately the most money humanly possible. And for that, then you got to take the top 5-6 teams out of each one of these conferences and go form their own conference. So that's what I think is going to happen. I don't, whatever happens today is completely different than what's going to happen tomorrow. These one good thing I will say, Ben, is it's encouraging, even though it's a little frustrating from a fan standpoint, because I think you want to see USC and Texas and Oklahoma, jump to the SEC as fast as possible. At least they are kind of fulfilling their obligation with the conference. If these teams and universities can just get up and leave and just pay their fine, then that would be real chaos. So at least there's a little bit of a drawback, I suppose, from that standpoint. But college football is no more as we know it. Three, four years from now, who knows?
The contractual obligations of when you can exit a league, even when you are rumored to go, has been something that has been studied across the case. You could even think of schools leaving CUSA or the AAC and what they have had to do in terms of early exit buyouts. Mike Gundy at Big 12 Media Days last week joked around at the idea of, why are Oklahoma and Texas still here? Why don't they just try to buy themselves out early? We'll take that $80 million and disperse it among the rest of our league, the people that actually want to still be members of the Big 12 Conference. And one of the things that Nick Saban went on to further say is, what needs to be maintained is competitive balance. My biggest concern is, quote, competitive balance. The NFL, which I was involved in for 8 years, said Saban, every rule that they have is to create competitive balance. If they could have every team go 8-8, so at the end of every season, every team was playing in the last game to get into the playoffs, they would be ecstatic. Of course, they play 17 games now in the NFL. It's always very funny to me, Scott, to hear Nick Saban speak of competitive balance, because Alabama has made it to 7 of the 8 college football playoffs that we have seen in its 8-year iteration. They have won 3 national championships in that 8-year time. The SEC has won 5 of the 8 available national championships. So when you think of the reality of college football, even with this idea of blending towards super conferences and what that might mean from a regular season perspective and what conferences and rivalries and all that look like, from crowning a national champion perspective, we have always been in a mega conference type chalk environment where the cream rises to the crop more so in college football than really any other sport.
Yeah, I mean, it does. It is kind of funny to have he preaches competitive balance. Meanwhile, his team has been by far, right, the most dominant team over the last 10 years. Be careful what you ask for there, Nick. You just might get it, as the saying goes. College football, Ben, as long as you and I have been alive, has never had competitive balance, and I don't know if it ever will, unless they move to this, like I said, this football NFL format of the top 32 teams. You've had basically, honestly, since I've been alive, since you've been alive, and I'm older than you, it's been the same 10 teams or so, right? I mean, nothing's changed. You couldn't tell me if you opened up a newspaper and looked at the college football, top 10 preseason rankings, is this 2022 or 2000 or 1980 or 1970. I mean, it's the same. It's Notre Dame. It's Alabama. It's USC. It's whether these teams are good or not, it's the perception. It's Ohio State. It's Michigan. It's the same team. The only one that it's kind of made a little bit of an inroad, it probably is Clemson with the job Dabo's done down there. The old Danny Ford days, they were halfway decent, but then they fell off. But other than that, it's the same schools, and it will be forever as long as it stays like this. There'll never be competitive balance.
Clemson has made 6 of the 8 college football playoffs in this 4-team format, and that will be a conversation that goes deeply into conference realignment as well. When might we see an expanded college football playoff? There is an idea that makes it a little bit more open, a little bit more variety coming to college football. We'll see if that's actually put into practice and how many it get expanded to in that format, because that's also very big money, as TV revenue drives every decision that college athletics in college football specifically makes, because it pays for things at the university. It pays for things within your own athletic department. So that is what we await and see, and there will be so much of that conversation this week at SEC Media Days as they get rolling. But Scott, from an odds perspective now, as we look at the SEC this upcoming season, two of the three best odds to win a national championship hail from the Southeastern Conference. Alabama is booked as the favorite on FanDuel right now at plus 180. Ohio State has the second best price at plus 300. And Georgia, the third best number at plus 350. Of course, Scott, we had Alabama and Georgia in an all-SEC national championship game last year, and the Dogs won their first national title in four decades. A former Nick Saban assistant in Kirby Smart knocking off his former boss in Nick Saban there, with Georgia winning that national championship. Two of the three best prices says to me again, Scott, there's an expectation both of those teams will be back in the college football playoff, potentially battling it out for a national championship once again.
Yeah, I will say this, you know, as Alabama loses every single year players, they seem to be able to just recycle them in. Georgia, Ben, lost a ton of guys. Now, yep. Recruiting-wise, they're at the top, you know, or near the top, you know, whatever recruiting service, you know, top five for sure. So they've restocked as well, but I have a little more faith in Alabama restocking because they've done this before versus Georgia. Interesting little bet FanDuel offers up, though, is Alabama or Georgia. You get both versus the field at basically pick'em odds, minus 114. So, you know, according to FanDuel, anyway, you know, with the odds, the only other team they realistically give a chance of winning is Ohio State. Now, you could throw Ohio State into that mix as well and go Alabama, Georgia, Ohio State, but then the odds jump up to minus 340. I wouldn't be willing to do that. But how about an Alabama and Georgia ticket at pick'em?
I think that is a fascinating market to look at because, again, that even gives you a stronger indication. When you add in Ohio State, making it a big group of three there with Bama, OSU, and UGA, the fact they are minus 340 to win a national championship against the other 128 FBS programs that play for a national championship is ridiculous. But, again, that shows you the idea of chalk in college football. The wonderful thing in my mind, Scott, about CFP is that oftentimes in every sport, it's getting to the pinnacle. Who won the Super Bowl? All right, that's the best team in the NFL. But the memories that you have over a college football season with how weird and whimsical this sport can be at times often mean more to a specific fan base in a certain region of the country than who won the national championship. Not a lot of folks in Big Ten country really care that it was an all-SEC title game. They think of the Ohio State-Michigan game, or they think of that 9-overtime game between Penn State and Illinois. Those fun memories throughout a year can mean just as much as who won the national championship, but that is the chalk from an odds perspective and shows how difficult it is to actually have that competitive balance that Nick Saban so desires somehow, some way, in college football. So that's where it stands.
This?
Yeah, go ahead.
How about this? Are there two teams that you could have in the NFL and be pick 'em? Can you come up with two that you would take the two teams versus the field?
Nope. Could you?
No.
I mean, the two favorites right now, Buffalo in the AFC at plus 350, Tampa Bay in the NFC at plus 320. If you were to combine one of those two teams wins the Super Bowl against the other 30 in the National Football League, I still think that's a very, very lofty number. There might even be a price that we'll examine here on the other side of the break for something like that in terms of naming the Super Bowl finalists or whatever it might be. So, for instance, Scott, the Super Bowl matchup that features the two favorites in the AFC and NFC right now does have that on FanDuel. Buffalo against Tampa Bay is plus 1,700. That is wild when you think about that number compared to three teams
Alabama,
out of 131. Yes. It is a very, very different landscape in college sports than it is naturally in the NFL.
Yeah, I mean, you think about it, you'd still have Kansas City, you'd still have the Super Bowl champs, oh, by the way, the Rams, you'd still have the Titans, you'd still have the Bengals. I mean, you'd have a slew of other teams. No, I would definitely take the field in the NFL.
We'll go to the NFL up next because rookies are reporting to training camp starting today in the NFL. Stay with us here on Football Full Circle.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Scott Wetzel and Ben Stevens.
Back right here on Football Full Circle, starting today and throughout the rest of this week in the National Football League, rookies are starting to report to camp. Yes, training camp is here and certainly even more on the horizon over the next 2 weeks when vets show up and we get going to really truly get set for a 2022 NFL season. And part of those rookies showing up today for the Buffalo Bills. Scott, we just mentioned that they are the favorites to win the AFC at plus 350. But it does not stop there for Buffalo. The favorites to win a Super Bowl this year at plus 650, a dollar ahead of Tampa Bay, who has the second best price at plus 750, and the Chiefs, the third best number at plus 950. That's where the top three shakes out, Scott. Are you good with that order, how they stack up right now?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't put them in that order, but I could see where they would and the public would and all that other stuff. Yeah, it is amazing the love for Buffalo. It really, you know, people just think that they're going to make that next step. You know, Bills fans have been saying that for the last 30 years. So, okay, maybe they will finally make that next step. You know, I might have Tampa Bay ahead of them just with Brady back. But, you know, you always wonder, you know, what's really going down in Tampa and whether Brady will eventually fall off that map. So this year, I tell you, Ben, this year, you know, the consensus is the Bills. I think, you know, everyone thinks that eventually and what they did last year. I tell you what, though, unless they make some changes, people tend to forget they blew two leads late in that game against Kansas City in the final minute. Not one, but two. They better do something defensively to shore that up. I think Tampa Bay is a question mark. I don't think Kansas City is going to be nearly as good. Letting Tyreek Hill go, I'll never understand that. This is a weird year. For the first time, for me anyway, I don't see that overwhelming favorite. I could give you a dozen teams that if they got to the Super Bowl, I wouldn't be surprised. They really wouldn't. You know, the antithesis of college football, like we spoke about. I don't think Green. Yeah. I think Green Bay is going to miss Adams. The Chargers, are they ready to take that next step? You know, that would be a team that I would look at more so than and I still love my Bengals team from last year. I think they will. A lot of people think they're going to come back to the pack. Them at 20-1 in that division, I think that's a pretty good play as well.
I agree with you, Scott. I think it's wild, the disrespect in a way that Cincinnati has received this offseason. It was an idea that because they so overachieved last year in 2021 with a team that had a win total in the preseason at 6.5 and had the third longest odds to win last year's Super Bowl, only the Jets and the Texans had worse odds before we got the year underway, that because that was where Cincinnati came from, the idea they so over exceeded our expectations that this year negative regret is in store. They have to come back down to earth. Why is that the perception, though? Oftentimes, Scott, when you see a young core, a young nucleus, regardless of sport, overachieve, get to the pinnacle, or make a deep postseason run, it's thought of this is only the beginning. They'll only improve for here. Wow, what a future they might have. Maybe they can go on a sustained run of success of 3, 5, 7 years. For whatever reason, that is not the love given to Cincinnati, who are 20-1 to win the Super Bowl. They're plus 180 with the second best price to win their own division in the AFC North behind Baltimore. And they're behind Baltimore as well, Scott, in the AFC Championship market, where the Bengals, who won the conference last year, are 11-1, and yet they're tied with Baltimore 20-1 to win the Super Bowl. Maybe that should say something about Cincinnati, that the rest of the odds don't really paint that picture.
Yeah, it's weird, Ben. It's a good point because you have Buffalo that hasn't gotten to a Super Bowl, you know, in our little last 5, 6, 7 years that they've been threatening here, or not that long, but you know what I mean. Yeah. You got a Charger team that lost in the first round. home, oh, by the way, to the Raiders, and yet Cincinnati that went to the Super Bowl, and yet the Bills and Chargers are getting more love because you said it. There seems to be this progression theory. Buffalo's going to take that next step now. You know, the Chargers are going to continue to improve. The Bengals, well, they already did what they had to do, so they're going to come back to the pack. But why? It's the same thing. They're a young team, right? And it's not even like I'll equate them to the Memphis Grizz in the NBA. All right, they probably say, all right, you got John Morant and a bunch of other players. They're really not that good. You got one guy, right? But the Bengals, that's not the Bengals. Bengals have a superstar young quarterback. They got wide receivers galore. They got a terrific running back. Defense was underrated, but very, very good last year. I mean, a bunch of young guys. It's not this unassuming, oh, by the way, fluky type of team. It's got the stars. It's got the big names. I tell you, it doesn't make any sense why those other teams would be getting that much more love than the Bengals.
Yeah, it is an incredibly interesting thought because, again, there should be optimism behind Cincinnati, a team that won the AFC even when they were expected not to, and yet the biggest actual on-field gap for Cincinnati last year was how porous their offensive line was at times in protecting their biggest asset in Joe Burrow, and that's the number one thing they addressed in this offseason, where we saw a ton of movement in this offseason, something we really haven't seen in many offseasons past in the NFL. So I guess the idea of Cincinnati bolstering their offensive line is not nearly as attractive as Devontae Adams getting traded to the Raiders or Tyreek Hill getting traded to the Miami Dolphins. But yet it was something that Cincinnati did to get better. I also think, Scott, you could make a similar argument for the reigning Super Bowl champion, Los Angeles Rams, because we mentioned the top three prices to win this year's Super Bowl: Buffalo, Tampa, KC. The Rams have the fourth at 11-1. The reigning Super Bowl champion, Los Angeles Rams. I think there's value on LA, not only in the Super Bowl market, but certainly in that NFC championship market where they're plus 500, tied for the second best price with Green Bay. But both of those numbers, $1.80 behind Tampa Bay. The Bucs are the favorites in the NFC at plus 320. Relatively short compared to the rest of the NFC field, where I still think the Rams are the best team.
Yeah. The only thing I would guess is maybe because they're in a tougher division, or at least perceived tougher division, and I think that they would struggle a little bit and maybe not have the best record, whereas some of these other clubs are in a little bit easier divisions. You know, that would be my only kind of thinking, but they did a great job bringing everybody back. I didn't think they would be able to get it done, but they really did. And re-signed all these guys to huge, crazy contracts. Is the motivation going to be there for the Rams? If it is, you know what? They're kind of like the LeBron James. I'll keep on comparing it to the NBA. Try and beat LeBron James best of seven, right? Everyone's going to say in his heyday, you know what? It's not happening. You'll beat him one time. You'll beat him two times. You're not beating him best of seven. And that's kind of like the Rams for me. Get him into the postseason, Ben, when they're really focused and playing and that defense and everyone is really gung-ho. They're a tough out. They are a tough out because of that defense and the weapons they have on offense. So 11-1's not bad either, no matter where they sit come postseason time.
Yeah, I really like their price to win the NFC West. Yes, a difficult division on paper as we expected it to be last year and lived up to a little bit of that hype with three of the four teams making the NFC postseason a year ago. But I still have question marks about a lot of teams in the NFC West and then thus in the NFC, where I think the path for LA makes a ton of sense. The reason that Tampa Bay is such a relatively short favorite in comparison to the rest of the field is because the Bucs are minus 290 right now to win the NFC South, a division we do not expect to be very good this year with the likes of the Panthers and the Falcons and maybe the Saints, who I actually think could make a run to an NFC wildcard spot. But again, the Bucs should be able, as the odds would indicate, to handle that division, setting up a relatively easy path to an NFC championship game, or at least a top spot in the postseason where they would host a couple of games on a postseason run. So that's where I think the odds stack up, and you have to correlate all of these markets to kind of figure out your prices. But Scott, I think the Rams, if they can get over that Super Bowl hangover, which I'm not sure is an actual thing that will affect them this year, provide that value. Because I look at teams like the Niners, and I understand how good the defense is and how much talent they have really across the entire roster, and I really do think highly of Kyle Shanahan, but you're telling me they are one of the favorites potentially to win the NFC? They're a minus 225 price to make the postseason, almost a guaranteed lock as the odds would stack up for them to make the playoffs with a second-year quarterback in Trey Lance, who started two games a season ago. I think they could, and there's a lot of talent, and it wasn't like they got to the NFC Championship game last year because of anything Jimmy Garoppolo did. But I think it's a lot to expect out of a second-year quarterback that didn't really have much playing experience in his rookie campaign.
Yeah. It's going to be weird. It's just a fun season. You wouldn't think you'd want to debate this stuff in July, but actually the NFL is so cool, isn't it? I mean, it's just there never is an off day. You could come up with, to me, Ben, I think you have a lot of live dogs and all these things. No one gives Tennessee any kind of respect. Derrick Henry coming back, people just not buying into Ryan Tannehill. I guess that continues to be the mantra, right? Is Buffalo going to be there? All these great little storylines. My Dolphins, as a Dolphin fan, they can go 6-11 just as easy as they can go 11-6. Kirk Cousins, all that offense in Minnesota at 40-1. For me to put a bet on a team now in July, I got to get like value. I got to get a team that, okay, if I don't square up now, I'm going to drop, odds. And, maybe Minnesota at 40-1, maybe the Dolphins at 41. Raiders at 40-1 is another one. I tell you, as much as I think Davante Adams is going to hurt Green Bay, boy, I tell you what, that Raider team, if Derek Carr can be a decent quarterback, and he's turned into a pretty good quarterback, I mean, at 40-1, that would be kind of my dark horse team, Ben, the Raiders.
Yeah.
As much as I hate the Raiders as a Dolphin fan.
I think it's interesting, Scott, when you look at Vegas, because the Raiders were the only other team outside of the Chiefs who won the division in the AFC West for a sixth consecutive year. The Raiders were that team that made the playoffs. There's been optimism about the Chargers for the last 2 years now with Justin Herbert as the quarterback, and certainly was the case last year. Brandon Staley was the favorite in the preseason to win NFL Head Coach of the Year, and I think at times showed why he was a rookie head coach, certainly in that regular season finale in the tie game that wasn't allowing the Raiders into the postseason. And there's optimism again for Los Angeles. They have the sixth best price to win a Super Bowl this year. There's optimism, of course, for the Broncos after acquiring Russell Wilson in a blockbuster trade this offseason. But I think you have to have some of that same optimism level for the Las Vegas Raiders. Their win total is 8. This was a team that won 10 regular season games last year. And they got so much better this offseason with Davante Adams. If he's not number one, probably the second best or at least top three wide receiver in all of the NFL. And defensively, they added Chandler Jones, who started off 2021 with 5 sacks in a game. They got better on both sides of the football. They have a new head coach in Josh McDaniels, and I think there should be some optimism about Las Vegas as well. It's an incredibly difficult division within the AFC West, and they might beat up on one another to a point where you're not going to see as many wild card teams as we expect in this division from a win-loss overall standpoint. But Scott, the Raiders are also plus 200 to make the playoffs. Again, a playoff team from a season ago that only got better.
Yeah, and they really didn't have Darren Waller much of last year, right? And I said I said the Chargers lost at home in a playoff game, but that was the last game of the regular season early that got the Raiders in. But yeah, I mean, with all those additions, and let's face it, but everything that could have gone wrong went wrong for the Raiders, with the head coach being fired, asked to leave, up and down. Waller, their best player, arguably, missing most of the season. Now that you add him back and you get Adam, I mean, this team. It's a tough division, obviously, but I do like the Raiders team.
A lot of tools on that offensive side for Derek Carr. Not just his college teammate and really good friend Davante Adams, but Hunter Renfro is as reliable as it gets in a wideout in the NFL. Darren Waller is probably a top 5 tight end, and Josh Jacobs came on very strong at the end of last year. A couple more minutes left on Football Full Circle. We'll wrap the show after the break.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Scott Wetzel and Ben Stevens.
A couple more minutes left here on Football Full Circle on the Sports Grid Radio Network. He's Scott Wetzel. I'm Ben Stevens. And Scott, we've been going through some of the futures market as we get ready for a new football season. We started in college football as SEC Media Days begin today. We have ACC Media Days later on this week as well. And rookies in the NFL, a couple of squads, reporting to training camp today. The Buffalo Bills, the favorites to win a Super Bowl, the AFC Championship. Their quarterback, Josh Allen, is not a rookie, but he's the favorite to win the NFL MVP. And the Las Vegas Raiders, their rookies reporting to camp today because, as we both just shared, Scott, we're rather optimistic about Las Vegas entering 2022. The reason the Raiders reporting today is because the Raiders take place in the Hall of Fame game on August 4th, less than a month away, really only about 2.5 weeks away, Scott. That's the first NFL preseason game that we will have. The Raiders currently a 2-point favorite in that early look ahead line against the Jacksonville Jaguars. Scott, what are your thoughts on betting NFL preseason football?
I do it. It's not wise to do, but I do it. Yeah, actually, there are some angles, you know, over the years, the typical angles, you know. I do love betting on teams who have new head coaches because they want to instill the winning attitude. Yep. I love betting on teams that have quarterback battles just because you generally have both offenses staying there a little bit longer, or first team offenses, because the coach wants to see both quarterbacks with the best players. So little goofy things like that. And historically, yep, there are guys, Ben, that coaches that do very, very well. And historically, there are guys, head coaches, who just blow off these preseason games. So you get a lot of decent angles.
Very much so. Like the Baltimore Ravens, for instance, John Harbaugh, yes, takes it very seriously. They had an 18-game preseason winning streak that was, yeah, snapped last preseason. But you also have coaches like Sean McVay who could not care less about the preseason. And I love the idea of quarterback battles because that is competition at its finest, and there's where you can find an edge. This was Football Full Circle. He's Scott Wetzel. I'm Ben Stevens. The Money Line is up next on the Sports Grid Radio Network. Kevin Walsh and Donnie Wrightside got locked.
Hey, it's Bubba Wallace from 2311 Racing. You know what it feels like forever? Sitting on a plane waiting for takeoff. Good thing I've got Chumba Casino. With daily boosts and social casino games on tap, this is the kind of fun that makes time fly. Why not turbocharge your downtime? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.